was an absolute cock and fucking ball to get here tonight, let me tell you. Let me fucking tell you.
Oh, what a fucking journey so today has been.
Can we all just like agree that we always start this podcast with, oh Jesus fucking Christ.
That's because we're fucking, all of us are tragic.
Every single one of us. Every single one of us?
Cursed. We're just so cursed. Lizzie,
do you want to tell the listeners what the fuck you did? You silly bitch.
Right, well, I feel like we don't need to start it off on that note, Kiva, so thank you so much attacking me. So, right, basically, I did make a massive cock up in that I completely, and I mean completely, forgot that we had even recorded a podcast last week. Like, I mean, I had fully blocked that shit from my memory, don't remember a fucking thing.
I don't think you were there for Edgar.
I was. I have no idea. I was.
No way. I was. I forgot you were in. I thought it was just me and Savannah.
No, that was only for the taxi driver. That's already uploaded. And then we're already a week behind.
Do you know what?
So we're technically like, we're going to release this.
We're a week behind. I thought we were a week ahead.
No, we're a week behind.
Sake, lads. Like, see, we had like 6 months to organise ourselves and we're fucking still fucking it up.
We are fucking, right, disastrous, right? So I was like, right, okay, this is obviously the first week of recording the next heavy hitter, which I am going to go second. So I had been working on notes for like my next episode, like my mini episode where I was just telling the story, right? Not even fucking thinking about the one I was actually meant to be doing until today, like the day of recording when Savannah, thank God, sent in a voice note to be like, lads, BT dubs, I'm sick, and I was like, oh, Joe, don't worry. Send me on your notes if you don't think you're up for it and I'll do it. And she was like, wait, what?
Cue full fucking panic on my end, man. I'm here fucking hanging sick, barely able to record. And I'm like, it was my week.
It was a fucking disaster. Anyway, so by the grace of fucking God, we have managed to concoct an episode. Well, by concoct, I just had to finish my notes that I did. But I'm going to put out a little dabble of a warning. I was so manic today that God only knows what the end of these notes look like. I don't even know if they make sense, right? So it might be a case of choose your own adventure, choose your own storyline, because I don't know if what I'm about to say is going to be actually fact. I was so fucking rattled today. So, oh, God only fucking knows what way this is going to go. But you know what?
Who cares?
Silver linings. I can't think of one in the moment, but I'm sure there's going to be a silver lining in here somewhere. So we'll rest on that and it'll be grand.
Also, the school children that she was minding today were bullying her.
They were relentless. When I mean, I said it to the girls, I'm going to have my tubes tied so I never have children. Eh? My 24 wild kids that I had last year, and by wild, I mean they were known as like them kind of, right? Right? Just known. I only had 13 of them today. And
they made up for
I have never had to sit in silence like this before in my life. And I mean, I had 3 hours where I listened to nothing, only silence. And usually I'm not like that. But they drove me to it. They drove me to it. They sent me manic. They sent me fucking manic. Anyway, it's going to be fine. Because if anything, it's going to probably, maybe, well, actually debatable, make for a better storytelling. So who knows? We're going to keep it fucking fingers crossed and we'll see.
Maybe listen, it's not like the stories we cover aren't manic as is. Yeah, worth noting, I'm not going to be doing a lot of talking on this one for obvious reasons. I don't think this is the most pleasant voice for the fucking listeners right now.
You sound like you have a fucking pound of dirt up your nose.
I am fucking dying, lads. I don't know if I have fucking a head cold, the flu, COVID-19 or the bubonic plague at this point. I'm fucking hanging. But I'm here for this fucking story because Lizzie's been teasing us for weeks. So,
yes,
I got to keep my opinions right to an absolute minimum. Sorry for how I sound. But Quiva, you're going to have to pick up the slack. You're going to have to react for both of us.
Oh, God, that's so much reacting. That's so much reacting. I don't react much on the best of days.
Well,
so
do it for the podcast.
I know,
I
will. I'll do it extra. And I'll... you could just... potentially doing like a Squidward cosplay today.
Oh my God, yes. Right.
So before we start the story, right, I do have a bit of a random question, so do bear with me. So basically the other day I was making food and I started to kind of dissociate like a small bit, like going a bit mad trying to think of like what would be like trying to survive like zombie apocalypse with some of the K-pop boys. Anyway, not much. But I had a thought within that thought, right? What would be worse, right? If everyone, right, that has ever died has like risen from the dead with like murder very much on their mind, right? Ew. Or what we typically think like a zombie apocalypse would look like, right? And I'm going to break it down further and I'm going to have like explanations and then like you can, because I'll explain it more, right? So all of the people that have ever died, right, think kind of like White Walker from like Game of Thrones vibes, right? But yes, right, while there might be an absolute fucking heap of them, but if we take it from the standpoint that we live in a modern era and there's fucking buildings everywhere, right? And not these said buildings are probably, presumably, built on the top of like a rake of dead people. Like, do you know what I mean? Just like throughout the years. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, obviously.
So they're not making it out at all, right? The ones that are like well old. Museums are hanging on to a couple of them, right? The Victorians, you know, well, thanks to them, snorted a couple of Egyptians up their noses, right? So thousands of them hooers have since disappeared, so they are not making an appearance either. And then, we also can't forget about the people that decided to be turned into Hoover dust instead of being buried. So they're obviously not making an appearance either.
Right.
Right?
Okay.
So if you take it like that, so all that's really left are like a couple of the hoers that are buried like a couple of feet deep. Right?
Uh-huh.
And of course, right, they're all at mad different fucking states of decay, like some are bones, like some are dust. Do you know, a bit of a breeze comes, are they probably going to fucking disappear in the wind? Probably, right? But like the freshly dead ones, right, they're a bit nimble. Well, actually a lot nimble and a little fast, right? But we'll say for these ones, any like mortal wound will kill them. So like headshot, gut shot, you know, fucking take out an Achilles, they're bleeding out, they're dying, right?
Okay.
But any of the oldies that were like buried with weapons, just say they can try to murder you with that, right? But now if you think of like what we kind of know as like a zombie apocalypse, just say it's a virus, you know, so not many, like not as many of them as people that have obviously, like all the ones have like died, do you know, like throughout history, do you know what I'm saying? But a vast majority of the like zombies are all on the same level, as if they're all nimble as fuck. And they're all very, very fast, right?
Okay.
But like, as is the way with viruses in general, they mutate. So you've heard of fucking rumours about these souped up zombies that are like highly more intelligent, even more difficult to kill. Mm. But these ones can only be killed with like headshot. So which ones do you think would be worse? Like which scenario do you think is worse? I know that was a lot of information.
The way I can't really give my opinion because my internet dropped right as you were explaining everything.
I mean, that's actually
I heard, okay, basically, so that it was anyone who's ever died ever, bar obviously the ones that were like dusted or whatever, rises. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or just super intelligent, harder to kill ones.
Obviously, I picked the ones like what? George Washington is a whole fucking in a liquefied
Thank you.
State, like.
That was actually my thought as well. That was my thought. Like, what? I take a sweeping brush and I'm able to kill like five of the cunts in like one foul swoop.
Yeah, no. I'm
with a sweeping brush.
Obviously, like, realistically, it's a case of do you want to fight five fucking 3 year olds or one fully grown person?
Yeah, give me the 5 3-year olds.
So fucking true.
Obviously, you're picking the small children. True. Like, it's going, both are going to be hard, but like, I'm realistically.
You can launch.
I'd rather fight. A grown man that is, you know, barely head to head together versus one that's fast as fuck.
Yeah. No, I fully agree. Fully agree. Like, I know some of the, like, the ones have already died. Yeah, like, they might be, like, fresh on the ground for, like, a fucking week. And them ones are normal. Like, they're fine. As in, they're strong.
Yeah.
But are the amount of them as much as, like, what would happen?
Yeah, they're only as strong as they were.
Fucking everyone on Earth just... Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, like, it's not, like, some souped up shit, like, they're normal, like, but I mean, like, from the standpoint of...
Like, what's the bog bodies gonna do to me?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, like, do you know? Nothing. Literally not a thing.
And if they're, like, young and freshly dead, then I'm pretty sure they weren't healthy. unless they've been, like, shot or something.
Fucking... So fucking true.
But, and then if they were, like, healthy their whole lives, then they're probably old. So they're decrepit anyways.
And at no disrespect, any of the ones in accidents, you're probably mush anyway. You're probably mush. What are you trying to, how are you trying to attack me?
You know what I mean? I'm like, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Like, I know there is definitely probably a fuck ton more of the ones that, like, would just be here if everybody, you know, like a normal zombie apocalypse happened.
Mm.
But still, I think I'd rather take my chances with that.
Yeah. Like, the only part is, like, yeah, it's when they start biting healthy hosts, that's when we have an issue. But that happens in either scenario anyways.
Yeah. No, I'm picking the gammy ones. Like, I'm picking the fucking ones that are held together by hopes and dreams. And
I know, I fully agree, man. Oh, sorry, I have to have a big fucking shit. I need that. Right. Time to get serious. So, are you ready to talk about this absolute fucking dose? I know you have no idea who he is right now, because you couldn't guess from my, I suppose, not obvious fucking clue that I gave the last time. But are you ready?
Oh, but for that exact reason, yes.
Okay. So, a big shout out to Neve, who I know was re-listening back to the podcast and still couldn't figure it out. But anyway, Neve, a bit slow of you. Anyway, so Neve first brought our attention to this particular piece of shit back on the drunk episode. Yeah. When she had mentioned him, I was like, this whore seems like the most batshit kooky cunt I have ever heard of in my life. He's going to be perfect. Now, I went into this thinking I'm going to be like able to make a funny like ha-ha as a funny a lot at this man. When I tell you, he fucking rotted me. He fucking rotted me. But anyway, look, I suppose I actually can't blame you, because we were half blocked. So that's why we couldn't remember it. Savannah, you blocked it out because of fucking mental trauma that this episode gave you when we were trying to edit it. So look, I fully understand.
I mean, there's also, Lizzie, a very good chance that I edited it out just in a chunk of, yeah, this seems like it could go.
No, you didn't. No, it was fully there.
Still there? Okay, fair.
It's still there. It's still there. But anyway, like I said at the very start, this yolk is the definition of the word of fucking dolls, right? Human plague, a ball of lead. So today, he's fucking gross. He is fucking gross. And that's exactly why he earns the title of human piece of fucking phlegm. Anyway.
He's in my nose.
Savannah, that's exactly where he is.
That's so sick, man.
Fucking true.
Listen, it's an appropriate episode, what can I say?
Exactly. So today, we will be talking about Charles Howard Schmid, as in Schmid as in Skid.
Skidberg!
Yes!
Skidberg! Charles Skidberg!
Because when I said, the whole poodle thing, when man got arrested, his wig was so atrociously bad. It literally looked like he had a Yorkshire Terrier on top of his fucking head. It was atrocious. It was scandalous.
Oh, Schmidmerg, yeah. Oh. I forgot about him.
Oh, man is a whole fucking fool. And do you know what his nickname is? Like his fucking, it's not calling card, but like the name that the media has dubbed him. The Pied Piper of Tucson. Right?
Okay.
It's so embarrassing.
Okay, the wig.
I presume he's a serial killer, is he?
A ding ding.
The way I would be my final murder if I ever got fucking dubbed the Pied Piper anywhere.
It's so fucking embarrassing. And I'm going to get into later as to why.
I presume he was
this.
A bit of a paedophile.
I was going to say, is he a nonce?
Kind, right. He's kind of noncey in the sense that, like, if he was around. Like, nowadays, he drives an Opel Corsa, he's 25, and he picks up young ones outside a teenage disco.
He's calling the 14-year-olds that are, like, waiting for them to collect them after study. Yeah.
You're so mature for your age.
Oh,
but he
my
didn't,
God.
Like, nonce it up, like...
No. Like, not kids.
Over.
Okay.
No.
Wait, what's his name? Charles?
Charles Howard Schmid. Schmid likes kids.
Incredible.
But we're definitely going to be mocking him for this name, like, later
on. Oh my God, yeah, I forgot about him. Oh, we definitely gave him, like, a 14.
Oh my God, no. His was a lot. I feel like his was the one that we chugged a 15 on top of an already 3 or 5 drinks.
I think he's the reason that I actually nearly fucking died. Wait, I'm going to send it into the group chat, Savannah, so you can see.
Let's fucking dive in again.
Mm-hmm. So Charles Schmid was born in 1942 on July 8th to an unwed mother who honestly wanted absolutely nothing to do with him, like, kind of pretty much on the dot, right? And she put him up for adoption, like, almost immediately, as in, she put him up for adoption on day dot. Like, she had pushed him out of her vagina, and she's like, nah.
Yeah,
and
she put
him
bad
up
vibes.
Straight away. Now,
yeah.
I don't know if it was a kid, like, she definitely didn't want the kid. I don't know if it was a sense that it was him in particular, but later on, I'll explain like a little bit, well, not even a little bit about her, because we actually know fuck all about her, but he has a meeting with her later on in life and it just kind of went down very, very bad. But I mean, how there's definitely something if she didn't want him straight away. As in, like, as soon as he was popped out, he was literally carried away to a home.
I always wondered that. And I asked this question before to a lady, and she was like, it was this lady I worked with. We were talking about Mean Girls, and she was like, that's called postnatal depression. And I said, no.
No, it's not.
That does exist. But what if you literally birth a child and then you're like, it grows up and you're like, this is bad vibes. Like, what do you do?
What do you do, man?
This child is bad vibes. There's something off with it.
No,
there's
man.
Something off.
Honestly.
Annie. I feel like you'd know. Like, you know those parents who post and they're like, my child just is weird. There's something, but not weird, but like there's something off. He's going to end up torturing our cat. We need to rehome the animals kind of vibes.
Yeah, no, for a fact. And
what do you do?
For him specifically, I'll get into it. But so I feel like somebody did pick up on those bad vibes off him when he was a kid. 100%. Right? So as luck would have it, well, luck for Charles, a wealthy couple that ran their own business, which just so happened to be at the Hillcrest Nursing Home, which was a fucking massive, massive retirement home in Tucson, Arizona. Like, it was a well-to-do one. So the family were obviously very well-to-do, right? And I don't think they could have kids of their own, so that they were looking to adopt. So on July 9th, literally, when Charles was exact one day old, he was adopted by Charles and Catherine Schmidt. Right? So I mean, day dog.
Back, please. I don't want that their name. I'm so
no,
sorry.
It's so awful. It's so awful.
Like Stuart Little got such a better deal.
Little Mouse, honestly, fucking squeaky.
Stuart Little, that sound. Yeah, I'm not about it. Kiva Little, Stuart, whatever the fuck. Charles Little, grand. No, Charles Schmidmark.
100%.
Sorry, right, so when you said Schmidmark, it was like I got drunk again. I was like,
I remember. Now, Charles was raised in Tucson, right? And he didn't have a great relationship with his adopted dad at all. He was all right with Catherine, the man. But Charles Sr. fucking hated him. Even when he was only like 4 years old, man, he knew like something was off. And like how he viewed Charles caused such a rift in him or his and Catherine's relationship. Like that it kind of started to break down their marriage, right? So now, you could say, yeah, like, the pressure of having a kid, because, like, they couldn't have them just say naturally. They weren't planning to have them. But then when they came together and decided, oh, we'll adopt, maybe it didn't work out the way that he kind of thought it would. Maybe the kid was taking too much attention away from Catherine. Maybe their business was suffering in a case that she's spending too much time away from the business, as is he. So that can cause a rift. But I firmly, firmly believe Charles Sr. was like, nah. I'm getting mad woman vibes off this little cunt. There is something not right about him. And his little fucking soulless eyes. Disgusting. Do you remember I said about Charles's mother? We'll just do it now because it doesn't really... We can get into it now. Later on, it doesn't fucking matter. But basically, when he was older, he had like tried to reconnect with her. Like he found out her name, went up to her apartment, and she fucking fleeced him. She was like, I didn't want you before, I didn't want you during, and I didn't want you after. So don't come back to my fucking apartment ever again. So I don't know if it was a case of like, it was like a trauma pregnancy or, you know, but you know what I mean? Like if...
She sounds like kind of a bad bitch, to be honest. Like, you don't have to be fucking mean about it. Just be like, listen, I'm sorry. Like, yeah, exactly like you said, it's a trauma. You're reminding me of something really bad that happened to me.
Yeah.
And no offense, but I don't want to fucking see you anymore.
Yeah. Or oh, for sure. Day.
That's what.
Yeah. Absolutely. And... this kind of led Charles, and I suppose like his dad fucking hated him as well. He always had an issue where he had to have people like him. Like, he kind of had to be the most important person in the room because he didn't want to ever feel that he wasn't enough or that he was like lacking in any way, because then he wouldn't feel important, right?
All right, you bad baby.
Mm-hmm. So in school, he was like mediocre at best. Like, I mean, very plain sailing. Barely kind of scraped a pass, but he really, really excelled in sports, particularly gymnastics, right? Like I was saying, Charles was terrified of being abandoned, right? And always kind of strived to make people like him, specifically to like recognize his talents because, oh, well, sure, I'm so great at this. Like, you need to praise me. You need to tell me how good I am. You need to recognize all the good that I'm going to do. And he wanted people to think that he was fucking cool as.
Okay, so word of affirmation, please. Oh, yeah. Fucking grip.
He kind of made gymnastics like his whole personality and like it's something that like,
oh no,
yeah, he, gymnastics, like, please,
gymnastics, sir. I know. And he like hyped,
guys, no, he was definitely that child who was like, guys, watch, 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 and he like would do the splits quite badly.
No man, he'd do a somersault, like, I, that's the vibes I'm getting.
No, he's like, you know, the crab.
No, it's so bad.
Man's inside so the bad. Fucking rug in the sitting room going, guys, because, watch, watch, and the fucking, they had to like mute the news because,
do you remember,
the drop if they don't.
When it showed what, like, gymnastics was like in the Olympics, like, way, way back in the day, it was literally just them doing, like, cartwheels and handstands. Like, nothing that the fucking mad shit that they're doing nowadays. Like, it's so plain sailing to the fact that I probably could have fucking done it. You know what I mean? Like, they're just walking on a balance beam.
To be fair now, I've never been able to do a fucking cartwheel. I've never.
Either can I.
It's the block is unnatural. I can do a handstand. I can't do a fucking cartwheel. It feels,
I think,
unnatural.
It's the whole tumble. Yeah, no, to be fair. To be fair.
Yeah, I'm top heavy. I can't do shit.
I feel like top heavy would help with a cartwheel, no?
Yeah.
Well, no, because you just stay down. They flip upwards when you go upside down. It's like, oh, shit.
Right. So, Charles had apparently let his grade slip, you know, because he was this great athlete, like, and he had to prepare for competitions. He was a fucking star, after all. So people were like, right, Charles, since this is like the only thing literally you're able to turn your hand at, we'll give it to you.
Fuck off and do it.
But, you know, he also fancied himself like a little bit of a sidekick because he claimed he always knew how well he would do in a competition. Because if he closed his eyes, he could see the result in his mind's eye. Which I mean is an easily fucking cop out, because if he did shit in a competition, he'd be like, oh yeah, lad, sure I knew I wasn't going to do great. Like, before I even went into the competition, sure I seen how poorly I was going to do. So I technically manifested my poor result. Like, he genuinely, like, honestly, I know I'm taking the piss, but that's genuinely what he would tell people. That if he saw it in his mind's eye, that he would manifest that would happen, either good or bad. But he wouldn't tell people about it, like, after the fact. Or till I'm after the fact. Like, he had the competition.
Great way of proving that you're psychic. In hindsight.
He's like, yeah, I know that's going to happen. Okay.
Like, sure, Charles, like, all right.
It's like when you watch a movie with like a massive twist and then you have that one person who was like, that was so obvious. Why didn't you fucking call it then 20 minutes ago when nobody
say it when it happens.
Gonna happen?
Say it when it happens.
Like, be like, ah, she's sus.
Yeah, oh yeah, like, fair, you're enough. Like, oh, I don't know if I fucking fully trust this one now.
Like that, the new Scream, Scream movie, I was like, ah.
Oh, I remember that. I felt, yeah, that. Absolutely.
And then, call it when you fucking see it. Don't
call
wait
it when
happen.
You see
like,
it.
That's so I knew. Oh, sure you did.
Yeah.
No, you can fucking agreed. Tell. So now, right, you'd think because gymnastics, like I said, was literally the only thing the man had going for him, right? He wouldn't fuck it, right? You one would assume. But no. Despite literally carrying his high school to the state championships, because apparently he was like the best one that they had, right? So he must have been somewhat alright. I know we're slagging him. He must have been alright. Didn't Charles go ahead and steal some tools for God knows fucking what from the school's shop class? Wasn't discreet about it at all. Obviously got caught, got suspended from school and therefore disqualified from the competition. Right? He never returned to school, even though he was eligible to come back. He was just like, nah. And he never competed again. But sure, he was trying to act the big man because he was saying, I quit out of boredom. Charles...
Oh,
you fool. You mean the only
yet
reason.
Again, he's the child that nobody fucking likes in the playground. I wasn't
nobody
anyway
liked
that.
Him, man.
Why were you hiding up a tree then?
Nobody likes him. Like, literally, 90% of the fellas that he went to school with thought he was a fucking freak. And he only ever joined in with them so that they could take the piss out of him later. Like,
but he's definitely the kid that, like, he loses the race back to the fucking, like, the home plate. And he's like, I wasn't playing anyway. So why did you race me then?
Yeah. No, he's the type that cries because he wants a participation medal. He's one of those. He is one of those.
He's definitely, there was always one. There was one in my primary school class that used to, like, you'd know his team lost in the fucking five-a-side at lunchtime because he'd come back down crying. Is it really that serious? He also supported Sunderland, and I didn't know what that meant at the time, but I knew it was
ew, Sunderland. That's actually a bit sick. But anyway, by the time he was 16, he was living in his own quarters, as he liked to call it. But realistically, it was his parents' property, and they were giving him an allowance of $300 a month. $300 a month back then, they were giving this little cunt, right? And they basically let him run ragged with himself, because I don't think that they necessarily wanted him in the house, like, all the time, even though he got on well with Catherine. obviously Charles Senior was like, now get him out of my fucking line of sight, I can't stand him. And they're like, you can be somewhat independent. And the fact that they were paying him to live out, they weren't saying, oh, Charles, go get a job. No, Charles, here you go.
Please go away from us. Here's money to do leave. So.
He just kind of thought he liked that he was deadly because his parents had given him a car. He had saved up enough money from the $300 that they were giving him a month to buy a motorcycle, right? He spent much of his time on like the speedway, which is where like cars would go, do like to fucking race against each other. People would like look at each other's cars. It was like a social gathering. Not like the fucking car lads still do like nowadays. But obviously back then where they had like good cars and everything. Anyway.
They meet up at a Tesco car park now.
Yes. So, oh my God, that used to make me die because I'd see all these lads and they would literally think that they were God's gift. And they're parading around with their fucking souped up BMWs that can't even drive over fucking speed bumps or that low to the ground. And you're like, man, you are scraping when you drive by. You sound like a fucking sack. But anyway.
You were, once again, in a Tesco car park.
like, a lot of lads would go there to kind of, like, pick up girls, like, drink with their lad friends. So he would go, but he'd be by himself quite a lot because, like, man actually had no mates. Like, none of the lads, like, wanted anything to do with him. So he kind of just, like, skulk around and, like, try get with, like, different girls. So in short, Joe, like, a bit of a sad case. And it only gets worse because not only was he, like, painfully embarrassing, he was also entirely unself-aware. Like, I would say 90% of lads didn't fucking like him. Thought he was a weirdo. But he honestly thought he was top dog. Like, he thought he was one of the most popular boys ever. And he fancied himself, like, a bit of a Casanova. Like, he thought he was hot as shit. And Charles Jr., and I do mean junior because when I tell you a man stood at a massive height of 5'3", so, you know, could shop in the junior boy section after local Tesco's if he did so decided to, right?
Oh my God, the 5'3" thing has five
brought me
back. 5'3". Oh, right? Lizzie, we definitely drank. Here's the reason I ended up in the hoop I was in.
Mouldy. Oh, no, it was. It was Charles. It was Charles sent us over the fucking edge.
It was Charles. And he was the baseline of everyone. You were like, oh no, this guy. I was like, he's not as bad as Charles though.
Because no, Charles was horrific.
Charles was like, he ticked no boxes.
Not a singular one. Not
what box did he tick?
None, Kiva. Maybe the sex offending one. Maybe if that was a fucking box he could tick, maybe that. Nothing else.
He was angsty. In a creepy, weird way. You know, the lad who's like in the corner of the smoking area, just eyeballing everyone in a creepy, weird way. And you don't want to walk past him because you're like, he's definitely going to grope me.
He's not even angsty, that's the thing. He's quite sociable. And he thought people liked him. So much worse.
Even worse.
Oh, anyway. In a constant effort to show that he was cool, Charles decided he would mould his own appearance onto the ultimate sex god / rock and roll's fucking star of the time, Mr. Elvis Presley.
Oh, no.
He would use pan stick... unblended as well. He would not blend his shit. And it would just be like...
not pan stick.
Pan stick that was...
not actual pan stick.
Savannah. And it wasn't even his same shade. As in, he was like going like tangerine. Do you know like...
tell me it was 14.
I was going to say Max Factor 14. Like, so bad.
It was so 14 with the unblended neck. Oh my God. But, I'm not even sorry I'm talking. I need to respond to this because Max Factor Panstick was my foundation, but I was realistic and I wore 12.
I wore 12.
I'm a white bitch.
And I blended it.
If I was feeling a bit self-tanned, fucking 13. 13. But 14 is an abomination. It is tangerine coloured.
It is the most awful colour. Like, no, like literally no one is genuinely that skin coloured. No one. No one.
There's zero people with that skin tone. No. You only wore 14 if you were a 1.
Mm-hmm.
You had to be a 1. You had to have 1 status.
Four fucking sure. But do you want to know what's nearly worse than the unblended pan stick? He had a lip balm, right? That he applied so thick that it actually turned his lips white.
Ew!
Sorry. No, because it was sitting on his lips like fucking slug goo. It's actually so disgusting. Like,
ew, what is wrong with him?
I'm going to make it worse again.
Imagine the feel of that. No,
I'm going to make it worse.
Can we just
before you get
here,
the overall vision? No, because I need you to have the overall vision. So one friend noticed that the tiny mole he darkened on his cheek seemed to get larger and larger over time. So man was drawing on fucking beauty marks.
That thing was intentional. Oh my god, I actually thought it was a full mole.
No. Like he might have like a natural mole, like a tiny one that looks like a freckle. But no, not that big bitch that you see on his cheek in his fucking arrest photo. No, no, no. No,
it's no, that's huge, man. Why did he think anyone believed that? Did you think it was a
conversation
that?
Piece?
Man, yeah, he's honestly not well. And, like, he used to dye his hair
jet black. Was it, like, his small Elvis?
Oh, no, I don't know what the fuck it thought. Oh, Savannah, that's actually exactly what it is. The other way, some people are able to, like, grow limbs off a piece of skin. Or, like, an ear. He's just grown an Elvis. Yeah. No, that's exactly what happened. Verbatim. Fact. Don't look it up. And the description is just... It totally gets worse because he would dye his hair jet black, right? Not wash it out properly. So when he was obviously sweating in the fucking Arizona heat, the black hair dye...
I want to kill myself!
...would run down his pan-stick face, leaving black streaks all over his fucking mush. It gets worse.
Sorry, can I just say, tiger. Right, Lizzie, please stop.
No, it gets
first of all, can I just say something really quick? I need to say something. You need to stop. First of all, imagine how sticky he was all the time.
Oh, like a fucking slug, bitch.
I used to use 9 or 10, like the light shades, right?
Mm.
Oh my God.
Yeah, well, I wasn't. What the fuck am I? And I translucent.
Girl, same. I used to rock.
You must be if you were wearing 10, like, because 12 was already white.
No, I used to use 10. I think 10 was my colour. But,
oh my God.
The way none of us used, nobody used powder on pan stick. It was just one of those things you just put on it and slipped on, right? Imagine that paired with the fucking inch thick layer of lip balm he had. Imagine how sticky he was. And then he's sweating because he's living in Arizona. Like, pan stick used to get oily here in Ireland. Imagine how sweaty and sticky and gross he was to the point that he was sweating out his hair dye and it was dripping down his fucking neck. And he had a layer of
was so unset, thick as well.
Like, wet, oily, greasy pan stick on his face. Yeah. And he had an inch thick layer of white lip balm on his lips. And then he had a mole drawn on that was the size of a fucking penny piece. I actually looked up a picture of him when he was young, and he does have, like, a big, like, a fairly big, like, light mark.
He 100% like, made it so worse.
Why are you darkening it to the point, like, it looks like he's dabbed actual black on it. Like, it looks like he dipped his finger into black fucking eyeshadow and went...
And
See, I fully thought it just had to be an actual big black mole, because why would anyone do that intentionally?
Because he's done such a shit job of it that it looks hairy.
Yeah, it does look hairy.
It's actually fucking grim.
Oh God, okay, it continues to get worse.
Anyways, somehow it's going to get worse.
It is, because to finish the image, Charles had chewed on a toothpick, right? And he'd work it around his mouth, you know, kind of lobbing it from fucking side to side as he spoke, like, man thought he was a pure guy.
Because he thought he was pure sexy, like, okay, Marlon Brando.
Mm-hmm. But
a young Clint Eastwood, maybe.
He would also put a clothespin, right, on his upper lip, or not his upper lip, his lower lip, right, to kind of jut out his lip a little bit. Presumably to give it, like, a deeper droop. Because he thought this, like, was the epitome of sex. Right?
What do you mean?
And
he would just leave it there.
Yeah, just.
No, you know the way Elvis has that bit of a pout going on? He definitely pushed it, like, behind here.
To kind of, like, judge it out. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And it still gets worse. So he had basically crafted these cowboy boots, right? He made, because man had to make some alterations, right? Where he had them that he was able to lace them up so they couldn't come off of his trousers. Because man would stuff his cowboy boots with beer cans, sometimes rags, sometimes tissues, to appear taller. Why beer cans?
Tell me this man is out here wearing makeup, getting lip fillers and getting high heels before his time. This is such a throwback.
I feel like Niamh is in the room with me. Like, why cans? Why not newspaper? Why not ball up socks? Why are you using cans? They're going to make a noise when you walk. They're also going to jab into you. They're only so flat you can get them. They're going to, like, even if you, like, what way are you pressing them? Are you pressing them, like, as in horizontally or vertically? Because if you're pressing them vertically, you're always going to be standing on some sort of a fucking edge. If you're pressing them horizontally, they're going to be digging into the sides of your heel.
Mm-hmm. No, man, like, he knew no logic at all. But
I hate him. No wonder I got so fucking drunk.
And would you believe he also gets worse? Because the whole boot thing, right? He, weirdly, how do I say this? The girls, like, this whole get-up weirdly worked for him, right? And man was actually able to pull fierce well, right? Girls, what the fuck were you thinking? And so if he ever you know, was bumping uglies with a young one and decided, oh, Joe, he had to take off his cowboy boots and he dropped down a couple of inches. Obviously, it would be a bit of a shock. And he would tell them that he was once a cripple. And he'd give this big elaborate story of how he overcame his struggles, how he became an athlete, how he was on his way to state championships until he grew bored of it. Like, trying to manipulate them into bed, and they'd feel a little bit sorry for him. And then, like, oh my God, like, you're so brave, blah, blah, blah. And then they'd sleep with him, right? He would also, right, tell some girls that he had some form of cancer and only had a few months to live for them to sleep with him.
Do you know what? I don't care.
I was waiting for the cancer.
I don't know if I'll come to the wake. I'll say that now. I don't know if I know you well enough. So
I might show face at the fucking. I might show face at the removal, but I won't be at the church. I don't give a fuck.
I'm shite.
Man, no. You could tell me right now, now, with your 5'3" fucking self, that I'm looking down at you. Self. Sorry, actually, maybe I'm kind of like eye level because you have 40 fucking tin cans in your shoe. But you could tell me that me sleeping with you would save the world, and I'd say,
we're all going down, so bye.
Shame about the world.
Bye, Armageddon. I don't care.
Go to miss it. TBH.
Mm. Mind your business and get yourself a fuck away from me. Clip clap the fuck away, because I know your shoes are making weird noises.
Oh man, he's clip clapping like a fucking pony.
Do you know what I want to know? I want to know what shoes he was wearing, because I guarantee you they're fucking ugly Chelsea boots.
No, they're cowboy boots.
Even better. Even fucking better. I bet you they were brown. I bet you they were brown.
I think they were black. But your luck.
The way this man had a whole, like, the hidden heels. Do you remember hidden heels were a thing?
Oh, yeah. No fucking man, in fact.
You're fooling no one, sir.
But you know, he honestly just continues to get more insufferable, because if it wasn't kind of working, where, like, the cancer story wasn't working, or the I'm a cripple story wasn't working.
Why would I want to sleep with you?
No. listen to this now, right?
You haven't given me one good reason as to why I should bear pity.
No, wait, listen
and
to
I
this.
And I don't actually feel bad for you. Sorry, right. I feel like you kind of deserve all of it.
Listen now, because you're going to be mad, so I need you to be all ears, wax out, pay attention, right? He would rub salt into his eyes to make himself tear up, because he would convince the girl that he was overwhelmed by being, like, by the privilege of being in her presence. And that's somehow worked.
If a man cried at me being like, I'm so privileged to be in your presence, I would say,
laugh in his
all,
face.
First of all, raise your standards. Okay, start there. Second of all,
get a grip.
Get the fuck away from me. Third of all, you're actually dribbling into my fucking drink and I need you to vacate the premises.
Absolutely.
Fuck off around me.
When I say my fanny would sew itself shut.
Oh, like, my God, what was that thing that you said before and it actually made me die? You said that it would suck back into itself so hard I would supernova. Yeah, that's me there now in front of this fucking...
Smooth as a Barbie. There's nothing there.
Rub salt into your eyes. Just snort that, it like a normal person.
Like, there's literally...
That is literally...
There's literally nothing more off-putting than a fella that is so over... eager, and you can tell they're trying their absolute best.
Sorry,
just to see your
imagine family. Him like a man in cowboy boots sauntering over to you, and he'll hold 5'5" now at this stage because he's fucking filled up his shoes with fucking tin cans. And he comes over to you and he's like, oh, I'm a cripple. And you're like, oh, that's sad, fuck off, basically. Oh, also, like, I'm dying of cancer. Oh,
yeah. I'm like, oh, that sucks for you.
And then he starts crying because he's like, I'm going to leave you alone because I understand. He's just, I'm just really privileged to be around someone like you. Like, you're so beautiful.
No, it's honestly, it's fine.
I'd be like, Lizzie, I'd like to know what you
I get see. Sick. I would.
You
I
see
get
your
sick.
One over there in the rain, right? Her name's Lizzie. She'd hop off you. Go over and talk to her.
The way I would stitch him a headbutt, I'm like, get the fuck out of my
see
face.
See your one over there. Yeah, her name's Lizzie. She'll love you. She's going to play hard to get, but she's only messing. She actually is going to, like, I'm telling you, you're just her type.
No, I would be done for attempted murder. Like, ye'd be covering me on the podcast. Ye would be covering me.
Like, please fuck off. Like, I hate a sob story. Sick. I hate a sob story. I don't care that you have a shit life.
So do a lot of people. Get over it, like. Sorry.
I don't actually care. It actually puts me off you that you have a shit life, because what, you're going to drag me down with your whole sadness.
But no, as well, right? I don't care. I'm not a page of your fucking diary. You don't need to tell me shit. I actually really don't care.
But also, okay, pretend I got invested in you. Now I have to fucking... Now I don't know what you're dying of cancer in like a week, and I have to fucking watch you do it.
But then, man, as well, he's not actually dying. Alone. He's lying, so they're going to have to see this cunt for ages.
Oh my God, true.
He's not looking for long term, is he?
Like, yeah, I'm in remission.
But man, he's going with gals that are in his town. He's not looking at outsiders.
He'll magically overcome it by the
come on. Well, there's two bitches. Come on. No. Would the word not go around? Look at your man. Look the hack of him.
Nah, no. Girl, look, I think they fancied him a bit of a bad boy because like that he had the motorcycle, he had his own house,
he wears had his own car. Boots.
Girl, we know.
How much of a bad boy? Where was he from?
Tucson, Arizona. Or Arizona, sorry.
So they're all wearing cowboy boots, and also Elvis wore cowboy boots, so it's like the sex of the time. Mm-hmm.
True. Mm-hmm. True. He definitely rocked a double denim, like he was like.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
With tassels to boot.
So, like I said, he didn't find it hard at all to, like, get girls. Like, he really didn't. And all these girls, like I was saying, thought he was a bit of a bad boy, a bit dangerous. But when he went to, like, go meet their parents, because as was the time, Joe, you can't just be going around dating girls. Like, you have to meet the fam as well. He would present himself as this, like, courteous, polite young man. He would assure them that, like, their daughters were so safe in their hands. And then he would also explain away, like, the dyed black hair. He was like, oh, yes, I'm in a rock band. I'm trying to be very successful. Like, Elvis, I want to make something of myself. I want to be able to support your daughter. So obviously they were all fucking faffing over him. Like they thought he was the best fucking thing ever. And he wasn't even in band. He wasn't. He was like, oh yeah, like I'm in a big band. No, he wasn't. He used to play guitar with his two fucking ex-con roommates. And that was it. Right?
What a big liar.
That's all he used to do. But these two fucking pains in the fucking hole would be John Saunders and Richie Bruns. Paul Gaff also comes into it, but not Paul's actually not important. These two arseholes in particular. So John and Richie, you're going to have to remember them for later.
Okay.
So it's not clear like when Charles started having these ideas and these fantasies. I'm presuming from a very fucking young age. Like he's never said specifically himself. But he would make jokes to some of his dates about how he fantasizes about tying up a girl, murdering her, like cutting her head off, cutting her hands off. He had also told like a few other girls that he did murder an ex-girlfriend of his by the same method. And how he buried her body in the desert. Unfortunately, these jokes or fantasies, whatever the fuck he liked to dub them, became reality. And that's when we're introduced to 15-year-old Aileen Rowe. So Aileen, her best friend was 19-year-old Mary French, who just so happened to be sleeping with Charles. Like she was one of the girls he had on the go. And Mary was kind of like enamored with him for God knows what fucking reason, because the state of the gaunt. Sorry, now this is after shooting up the page and I can't fucking see. Where is it? Oh yeah, Mary, who by all means was a bit of a cow. She hadn't got the best reputation, but she was, right? She was like your typical mean girl, but she wasn't popular. Like she was one of like the outcast kids, so you think she'd be somewhat, she'd be sound, but she was an outcast kid that was a cunt. So she was honestly just the worst of the worst. Like she was awful. Like nobody actually liked her apart from the lads, but that's only like not to shame anybody, but she only really had her lad friends because she used to get with the lads.
She was an easy riot.
She was a hoe.
Yeah, literally, yeah, right? However, Aileen had only moved to Tucson like a year prior and she was only 15, like 14 at the time when she would have moved. Didn't have an easy time really making friends and sure wasn't Mary all too delighted to have someone that she could influence and boss around. So she kind of controlled what Aileen did, like who she spoke to in school, like who she kind of ran around with in like friend circles, do you know?
Toxic. Yeah,
she was really, really bad. Like she was extremely domineering. Oh, but God bless her. Like Aileen was honestly like such a little dolt. Like she used to love like going into the desert, gathering like rocks that looked a bit funny, looking for cool crystals. Like she would have been like a little witchy bitch, you know, like nowadays. Like she just pure, like gentle, was super nice to fucking everybody that she came across. Like everybody had only great things to say about her. Like not even the fact that, you know, when people die people only ever say the good things, but it genuinely was a case of, no, she was just so lovely, she was so bubbly, she wanted to be like an ocean oceanographer. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but that thing anyway,
oceanographer
girl, that's exactly how you pronounce it. And I don't know what the fuck I said, but
what
anyway,
an oceanographer.
Yeah, she was like wicked random. Smart. Like, was above average in all of her grades. Like, so she had a fair chance of having this career that she wanted. So, like, literal beauty, brains to match, the blonde, blue-eyed Aileen, of course, attracted Charles' attention. And so, one afternoon, on May 31st, 1964, Charles had told Mary that, you know, try persuade Aileen to go out with fucking John, just because I want to fucking have a look at her. Like, Mary fully knew that Charles just wanted to oogle at her, but she didn't care because she was still, like, with Charles. Like, she wasn't kind of getting jealous. She just wanted to, like, please him. So whatever he wanted, it was pretty much a done deal. But Aileen had, like, turned down the invitation. But Charles honestly wasn't one to take an answer. Like, he had called Mary. made Mary hound fucking Aileen all day with calls, trying to talk her into going on this day. But each time Aileen was like, nah, I'm not going. Like, I don't really know Charles all too well. The part that I do know, I don't fucking like. So I'm obviously not going to go and hang around with him, you and his best friend.
If trying to convince me to go on a date, I actually would never talk to that fella ever.
I'd never talk to him again.
Stop fucking hounding me. Like, now I'm actually thick. Now you've pissed me off. I've said no. I meant no when I said it. I said it nicely the first time. Now I'm telling you exactly why I said no, and I'm saying it in a fucking mean way. I said no.
Mm-hmm. No, fact.
Leave me the fuck alone.
And, like, she also had, like, a big exam the next morning. So she's like, pal, I want to do fucking well in school. Just because you don't, because you dropped out, because you got bored, doesn't mean that I don't want to do well in school. So fuck off. How about? But Charles then, like, the big predatory creep that he is, arrived that evening at Mary's house with John, right? And they're like, no, we're figuring this out because the two of us now have had the best fucking idea in the world, Mary, and we're going to tell you what it is. So he all day had been stewing on the fact that, oh, I wonder what it would be like to actually kill someone, specifically a girl. It popped into his head seemingly randomly that day, and then he just hyperfixated on him like, no, I can't rest until this happens. So he just wanted to find out and see if it, like, what it'd be like just to snuff someone's life out and see if he could just get away with it. Just literally for the laugh. Just, like, not
as we all
not
do.
For the case of, like, he actually got anything off it. He just wanted to see if he could get away with it. Like, he wanted to prove that he was fucking smarter than everybody else. And that he was this great lad that he fucking pretended to be. And he had actually, he had literally made a list of potential candidates of girls that he was going to target. And, of course, fucking Aileen was one of them. So his plan was to lure her into a desolate place, presumably the desert, because he knew from Mary that she liked going there to, like, collect her rocks, collect her stones and whatnot. So he thought it'd be an easier place to, like, get her to go, like, you know. He then wanted to hit her in the head with a rock and bury her in the desert, because who the fuck is going to find her in the desert? And yeah, rather...
Fair point, but also... Fair point, but... moves. Like, a massive amount. Like, shit gets uncovered all the time because the sand shifts. Like, you can't... Anyways, okay, sure.
So, rather than Mary telling him, Charles, what the absolute ever-living fuck, you complete weirdo, get out of my face. She was like, sure, man, I'm after trying to get Aileen to come, and sure, she won't come. Her biggest fucking annoyance in this whole situation was that, well, I've already tried to get Aileen and she's not fucking listening to me. She did not care in the slightest.
That is so fucking bizarre to me.
She just did not care. And she one of Aileen's only friends, like, literally one of her only friends. She was like, Sherman, like, she won't do it. Stop annoying me. She just didn't care. And he was like, right, okay, well, if you can't convince her to come, you have to find me somebody else, because this is entirely your fault. But so he got himself into such a fucking tizzy over the fact that Aileen wouldn't come that he actually became restless. Like, he'd be pacing up and down the place, getting really frustrated, like, pulling at his hair. Like, he was starting to lose the fucking run of himself. But Mary wasn't able to find anybody. Well, I don't even think she bothered trying, to be honest. Like, I don't think she did. She just told him, oh, sure, look, I can't find anybody. So she's like, I'm going to try Aileen one more time. So Aileen was visiting, like, a friend that I think she used to study with in school. And she talked to her once again. But finally, Aileen just had enough. Like, Mary has been badgering her all fucking day. And she thought, it's actually less of a hassle if I go on this date, because she will not leave me the fuck alone otherwise. And how many times is this going to keep on happening if I don't go, like, at least one time? But she said she'd have to wait until her mother went to work, because her mum was a night nurse, and so she obviously could be sneaking out the house when her mum was still there. So when she was out of work, it was, you know, it was kind of free game. So when Mary reported the good news to John and Charles, they got a shovel, put it into the trunk of the car, and head off. So they drove around until they knew that Aileen's mother was gone. Mary went over to tap on the bedroom window, and she came out barefoot with curlers in her hair, wearing a bathing suit and a yellow checkered, like a cover-up, like a sarong. Right, carrying her shoes. Because I think in the desert where they were, there was like little alcoves, like little caves, and they might have had like little pools of water in it and stuff. So you could go for a dip if you wanted to.
Swim, like.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mary sat in the front with Charles while Aileen climbed in the back with John. And they drove out to the desert out by the Golf Links Road, where Charles liked to drink and get with girls, because, you know, he was such a fucking massive stud. So they walked for a while into the desert and then found a place where they could sit, talk, and they could go for a bit of a swim. And at some point in the night, Charles turns to Mary and says, oh, you need to go back to the car. You should go get a radio so we can listen to some music. Mary knew that this was a signal that something was about to go down. She should wait in the car. And he said, oh, it's all right. I'll give you two some alone time. I'm going to walk Mary down and I'll be back up. But as they were walking, they heard Aileen screaming fucking bloody murder. Charles told Mary to get into the car and just wait there when he went back down to find Aileen and John. John was like struggling, trying to subdue Aileen. And Charles like, man, you need to get a fucking grip. You need to do it properly. He was like, you need to put your hand over her mouth and you need to start strangling her. But that's the only way she's going to keep quiet. Charles then bound her arms behind her back with a guitar cord while Aileen begged to be told what was, oh man, that would have cut her to shit. Because she was like, she was fighting so hard. And when she was asking why were they doing this, he literally turned around and said to her, Mary wants us to do it. You know she hates you. Obviously, Mary fucking must at the fact that she agreed to go on with it in the first place. But the fact that he's not even taking accountability for this is an idea. Like, if he didn't have this idea, Mary wouldn't have done this. You know what I mean? Like, Mary would not have, like, been an accessory to fucking murder in this. And he instructed John to take off her swimsuit. But John had trouble getting it over her arms because, you know, obviously they were tied. Like I said before, Charles is a bit simple and he didn't fucking think of that. So Charles untied her swimsuit, put it on the ground and made her lie on top of it. Aileen, who was fucking terrified, obviously obeyed. And Charles then instructed John to go ahead because Aileen was crying so much that he couldn't kiss her. So John obviously sauntered on and presuming then that Charles had raped Aileen. And when he was finished, he called out for John to return. So when John returned, he found Aileen crying and trying to put back on her swimsuit. And as she was trying to, don't remember saying that where they were, like, there was kind of like little alcoves, like little caves where they might have like some of the swimming pools or like some like pools of water. Aileen was trying to walk in there to like get away from them, like trying to go to like the deepest part of it that she could where she thought she could escape them. But sure, like the two boys followed her. Charles picked up a hefty rock with a pointed edge and handed it to John. John was like, fucking no thanks. Gave it back because he wasn't able to go through with it. Yeah, it was like all fun and games. Like, he didn't give the whole assault part, he didn't give a shit about. Like, it was not even a thought in his mind. Like, he just didn't care. Like, he didn't think it was serious. But murder was obviously totally different. Charles then told John, go back to the car, wait with Mary if you can't tack it. Like, if you're not man enough, go back. So John had left, and then Charles bludgeoned Aileen to death with the rock. Like, he made mash of her skull. Like, he caved it in. I think she had like 4 or 5 fractures in her face alone, not including her skull. Like, he went to fucking town on her. Like, he was destroyed all over, like, in her blood. And it only come from her head. Like, that's how bad he had fucking better. So he had called out for John. John came back, had seen Aileen lying in a pool of blood. Obviously, this girl was not alive. Mary had also come with John just to check her pulse to see if she was okay. Well, not okay. If, you know, dead.
If she's dead,
Charles picked up the shovel and even had the neck to tell Mary and John that they had to dig with him as well and that they had to use their hands. So they all dug the grave, threw her body into it, and they buried the curlers that she had in her hair, like the metal curlers, they buried them separately for whatever fucking reason. They just covered her up with dirt and fucked off on home. Not a second thought about it. Like, they honestly did not care. Dropped Mary on home, then the two boys went home, not a word said. Like, he even buried his own clothes. Like, he came fully prepared that, like, oh, he wasn't going to change his mind. Like, he's bought a spare set of clothes because he knew that it was going to get messy and that she wasn't coming home. Like, he wasn't going to give her a chance kind of, like, to talk him out of it. Like, his mind was fully set on doing this. When he got home, he wiped the car down completely inside and out so there was no fingerprints. And he invented a story to tell anybody that asked that Aileen had agreed to go out with John that evening, but when they drove by to pick her up, she hadn't been home. So the next day, Aileen's mother, Norma, made every effort to find her daughter because Aileen was very good in school, like she never went out. So her mum knew her being out way past late, not coming home, not telling anybody where she was, like, it was something way, way out of the norm, right? She then contacts the police and she was like, look, lads, her purse is still here. Everything else is in her room except for the yellow bathing suit, a yellow sarong, and her flip-flops and her hair colours. Everything else is gone. Like, she's not going to run away with just those things. Like, oh, the rest of her clothes are still there. So it doesn't make sense. Now, Norma kind of, not fucked it for herself, but she shamed herself or made herself seem a bit mental so that the police never kind of took it seriously. Because she had told them about an apparent sex club at the high school that her daughter had described, to which, like, the young people were doing, like, doing drugs, doing, like, organised prostitution, all this kind of shit. I'm sure the officer in charge basically thought this was the most fucking ludicrous thing he's ever heard of in his life and, like, didn't take it seriously. Because obviously it is, but he just thought this one was a crackpot. I was like, no, your daughter's after running away. Case up. That's kind of it. Yeah. Like, Mary was questioned along with Charles and John, but Charles had taken the other two out. And he made them repeat their story, like, so much, so that when they did get asked by the police that none of them could fuck it up. Like, he had it hammered into their head what happened from the start to the finish of that day. And sure, like, they had no lead at all. So Aileen's father then had to fucking call up and be like, no, like, I feel like this needs to be properly investigated. Maybe we should get in the FBI. And the police were like, no, she has run away. But I know.
I fucking hate that. Why they do that. Like, you don't know.
No, you don't know.
I hate this shit. Like, that's why, like, I don't know. Like, maybe they do it here. But, like, even in, like, here in Ireland, like, if someone rings in and they're like, yeah, it's definitely a fucking prank call, they'll still fucking go every and time because you can't.
Mm-hmm. You can't ring it out.
Something is fake.
No.
You can't.
And I'm sorry, who's going to think a literal grade A student who's trying to get into, like, a really nice university is going to run away in a fucking yellow swimsuit and flip-flops?
He just wasn't arsed.
No, he wasn't arsed.
Fucking...
Yeah, they don't care.
They weren't arsed doing the... It's all about the paperwork. It's the effort of the paperwork. Yeah. Having to file someone as a missing person when they're like, do you know, if we hold off now for a few hours, chances are she'll show up and then we won't have to do nothing. Versus having to do a bit of fucking paperwork and making sure someone's all right. They're like, nah, we'd rather take the chance and hopefully she'll show up.
Yeah. Mm. But 100%. Aileen's father... Right, him and his wife, so not or Aileen's mum, right, they were divorced. But he called Norma, like the mum, and to tell her that he had a dream that Aileen had been murdered and left in the desert, right? He said he'd been visited by her in his dream and she showed him that she had been killed in the desert and that's where her body was. So Norma, like, she was like, no, I even feel this myself. Like, I feel like this is the truth. She went fucking hounding the police and then they were like, I suppose, understandably, that you can't go off a dream, but, like, they basically said to her, well, you're going to need to find more evidence before we even start to look at such a big area. Oh, and I feel like the gathering of evidence is actually very much your job, not the mum of the missing child.
It's not really that big of a fucking area. There's a certain, like, obviously, we're not saying check the whole fucking desert. We're saying have a look at the areas where people do go.
Tend to go.
Like, she went in a swimming pool, so... Exactly. She went into Simmatogs. Where do people normally go at her age? What's the kind of normal place that everyone goes to go for a swim?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, let's have a look around there. Like, nobody's saying go into the fucking middle of the desert because obviously she's not there. Oh,
exactly. It's ridiculous. But by March, when nothing had turned up, Norma Rowe went to the Arizona Attorney General and the FBI. She also called in reporters and, like, she was not giving up. But despite an official statement that Aileen was just another teenage runaway, like, Norma was like, no, like, please, please, please investigate. Like, she was not letting it down. She was even consulting psychics to see if they could tell her anything, if it correlated with, like, her dad, like, her husband or ex-husband, I suppose, like, his dream. But, like, nothing ever came of it. And Aileen's case was just buried under a massive amount of police paperwork. And no further comment would have been made about it, or it wouldn't have been thought about for fucking years later. No. And they weren't. Like, they literally, like, the police are the ones that killed that case. Like, they didn't bother their fucking holes. They really, really didn't.
That's fucking bullshit, man.
But now John was a bit old, right? And he didn't fancy going to college, didn't fancy going getting a job, so he decided to go join the Navy. Pity he didn't die. Anyway, his place...
The fucking lost his sea case would have been
Would have been chess case. But he's... role, we'll say, as Charles' best friend would soon be replaced by Richie Bruns, right? They were all in one big friend group, but you know what? Richie was taking top priority now at this point. Richie, by all means, was a bit of a fucking simple Simon. He's very much one that, like, dumb as a rock, will jump on a bandwagon and always sees things through, like, rose-covered glasses. You know what I mean? So, like, all four girls that he'd ever dated in his life had dropped him because he was so socially inept. Like, he just had absolutely no wits about him at all. Absolutely none. Honestly. Although I'm actually even surprised Mam was able to get up and tie shoes in the morning. And he was just so awkward around other people. But he wouldn't have many friends. But then he'd also, like, he would idolise certain people. Where that's, like, where his sole focus kind of went onto. Like, he wasn't able to balance friendships or different relationships in his life. You know, there's something, there's those people that can only have, like, three friends. But if they add a fourth one, they start neglecting one of the other ones. You know, that kind of way. Like, he can't balance it out at all. And he had idolised Charles. But now that Charles had a new fanboy, he thought he was the fucking coolest thing ever. And he knew fucking dopey Richie would follow literally anything he said. He also thought then, oh, I have a loyal follower. And that's literally how he thought of Richie. So he decided to tell him all about his big secret about how he killed Aileen. But sure, Richie was kind of used to Charles making up stories, and he would just be thinking, I sure isn't this lad talking shit, like, here we go, like, another funny story, because they want to show each other their badassery, is what he called it. So they thought that he was just, like, giving it the big and don't make no shit.
It was just lad talk, yeah. Like, yeah.
But in July of 1964, Charles had noticed a 16-year-old girl at a swimming pool near the Speedway where he used to hang around like a fucking lark. She was blonde, thin, much the way that he liked, and her name was Gretchen Fritz. And the other boys told Charles that, look, she's trouble for anybody who gets involved with her, but sure, that only made him fancy her more. And the day that he saw her, he followed her home like a fucking creep. And she lived in like an upper class neighborhood because her dad was a doctor. I think he was like a cardiovascular fucking specialist, the whole shebang. So like they had like money, right? But Gretchen herself was the family outcast because like she would shout at lads if they were acting like arseholes. And she'd like once told a friend that she admired sex workers for their ability to charge for what boys expected for free. And like Gretchen, girl, absolutely yes. But obviously it was not the way of the fucking time. And she was just seen as an absolute oddball freak. Yeah, absolute oddball. And like she kind of said like she was very like neglected like in her family life, where they didn't really want anything to do with her because they could never get on with her odd ideas or how she like perceived the world. So they just really didn't bother with her. One teacher called her a psychopathic liar. The headmaster of the high school recommended psychiatric treatment for her before he suspended her just because he didn't like her attitude. But I mean, I don't know, understand why that deserves psychiatric treatment. I guarantee you she was just like a challenging little bitch, whereas whatever the lads say, she'd be like, well, no, why? Why should I do this? Yeah. Why should I do that? And because it wasn't in her place, she should have just fucking obeyed and kept her mouth shut. She was seen as a problem.
She was a woman with an opinion. She was a problem.
Fucking fact. And because like she was having such a shy time in school because her teachers were calling her a psychopathic liars, the principal hated her and tried to have her committed. She just never bothered going to school then, because why would you? So she used to spend a lot of the time at the Speedway just hanging out with the other girls, hanging around with some of the lads. And in some cases, committing some minor crimes like theft and just stupid shit, loitering, you know, small things like that. Charles decided then he was going to knock on her house with a load of pots and pans, as if he were a travelling salesman. And after playing out this act, he confessed, look, it was all a lie, and that he had concocted it in order to meet her. Now, she thought this was funny. She's like, man, you're a bit weird, but you know what, fuck it, it's a bit funny. Come on in, and we'll chill out. And as they got to know each other, Gretchen had told Charles that, you know, her family didn't love her, and her brother-in-law was involved in the mafia. Now, I think Gretchen was a bit of a liar. But anyway, it's grand. And then, as they were growing closer, sure, they started sleeping together. And Gretchen had assumed, look, once Charles, you know, had sex with her, that he would fuck off and leave. But he was like, no, girl, I absolutely love you. I'm not going anywhere. And sure, Gretchen was like, oh my God, nobody in my fucking life loves me. This is obviously the best man to ever die on my doorstep. And she became like infatuated with him. They soon became a couple, despite the fact that Charles had also given Mary French and another girl, Darlene Kirk, fucking cheap engagement rings and had promised to marry them. But do you know what he was doing? He was making them like work and then put money into a joint bank account for them, which he was spending all of that money. Bastard. So Gretchen and Charles fought all the fucking time about girls that he was seeing. And she also couldn't stand Richie. She was like, he is far too simple. He's dumb as a fucking rock. Why does he idolize you? It's a bit weird. So he used to like grate on her, which I mean, completely fair. And because she was always getting on at him by you can't be flirting with girls, he was saying he wasn't, even though he was technically engaged to two other girls. So obviously, man was a big fat liar. And she didn't like his best friend. He's like, I'm actually just going to cut this off right now. But even though he called it quits, he couldn't get Gretchen out of his head, because she was in on the same secret that Richie was, the murder of Aileen Rowe. Because one day, she had stolen his diary, which is so embarrassing, the fact that he had a diary, and he, a whole 20-odd years of age, get a fucking grip, which contained the description of killing Aileen, right? And he also had written, like, excerpts about how he wanted to kill a 16-year-old boy, and how he wanted to bury him in the desert as well. And Gretchen used to, like, taunt him about this. Like, oh, well, I'm going to tell Gretchen, you stupid fucking bitch. I'm sorry now. Don't be taunting the person that's already fucking murdered somebody and is talked about doing it again. Don't be hanging this over his head just because he sleeps with you. It doesn't mean he's going to kill you or not going to kill you too.
Exactly.
He knows you have it over him, so he's not going to fuck you over. Don't threaten.
Mm-hmm.
He knows, you know.
Yeah. And so Gretchen knew that he had like been seeing other girls, but she didn't know about the engagements. And this was the big thing for her, because once she heard about how he was engaged to Mary specifically, well, she hit the fucking roof. Because he had apparently gotten her pregnant as well as Mary. He had two of them knocked up at the fucking same time.
Oh, no.
Mam's a dark bird. So that evening on August 16th, 1965, Gretchen had left her house at 7:30 with her 13-year-old sister Wendy to go see Elvis Presley in the showing of Tickle Me, right? But they never came home. So Gretchen had a car. She drove the two of them there. The car was left there. Not a fucking sight of them ever seen again. So when they didn't come home, their father hired a private detective who turned up at the cinema, found Gretchen's fucking red and white, is it Pontiac? Pontiac?
Mm-hmm.
That one, yeah. Right? And it had just, it seemed like it had been abandoned. Like it was just dumped there. Like I think she had a few belongings still left in it, like nothing had actually been taken from the car. And there were traces of gravel and mud on the front and back of the seats. But sure, if she was only driving to the cinema, sure, that's true, like the town. There's not going to be dirt and gravel on the fucking car. And the speedometer also had an extra 60 miles. And it had also been like disconnected, so they had taken it out. So basically, I think her dad used to kind of keep an eye on how far she was driving because he seen her as a problem child. And then also when it came to like filling up her tank, he'd only fill it up so often because, like, sure, if you're only going to A to B, you only need this certain amount of petrol, just say, or diesel or gas, whatever. So when he knew there was an extra 60 on it, he was like, that doesn't fucking make sense. And then the fact that it was disconnected, meaning that they probably drove further, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But how was her car still there? Like, her whole purse was in it. She had money in it. The stubs from the movie were in it. Her keys were in it. And also Charles' business card from a failed upholstery business was also in her car.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
But no one had seen sight of them, right? And William found no leads, but his sights were firmly set on Charles. He was like, no, this cunt knows more than he's letting on if he's not directly involved, right? So as the police were asking around, they were obviously showing the girls pictures, and some people apparently had seen them getting on a bus that was headed for Mexico because they're quite close to the border. So a search was set through the kind of nearby tourist towns in Mexico. So how the fuck they got that, I don't know. I don't know how that was sanctioned, but I suppose they're two missing kids, so it was probably approved like fairly fucking quickly.
Yeah.
But sure, nobody there, like nobody had seen anything. None of the bus drivers remember seeing the girls of those descriptions, like nothing. So they were, literally came up empty. And the police just listed them as runaways. But Richie and fucking Armand Charles were questioned by the police because, oh well, Gretchen was your ex-girlfriend, Charles. Richie, everybody knows a fucking Gretchen couldn't stand you, so we're going to obviously question you. Now, Richie, honestly, this at this point in time, didn't know a fucking thing. He hadn't a clue what had gone on. And they were questioned for mad, like, or mad by the police. And when they got out, Charles just basically started sniggering. And Richie was like, what the fuck are you laughing at? And he was like, well, I killed them. And Richie yet again thought that he was pulling the piss. And he's like, no. He told him how he had strangled them both, put their bodies into the trunk of the car, and left them out in an obvious place because he didn't really care any longer. But he did add that it gets easier each time. So he had basically driven out to the desert, fucked their bodies, is what he said, and just came back, right? And Richie was at times like, nah, man, I actually still don't believe you. Like, stop, you're starting to scare me. So Charles was like, all right, so, bet, get in the car and I'll go show you. So he literally brought Richie to the site where he had buried the bodies. And he showed him. He showed them. And Richie honestly was like a tiny bit fucking traumatized. He was like, oh,
yeah.
What the fuck? And he really, like, he did not know what to do. And this kind of set off the tone for Richie's downfall. Like, he declined mentally so fucking fast after this. It was so bad. And he, like, Charles kind of made him swear to, like, hold on to the secret, well, because, like, oh, I'm after telling you. If you tell on me, sure, you're going to be implicated in the murder as well.
Yeah.
Richie's a bit, you know, a bit take, as we said.
Obviously.
And so he believed it.
Gotta believe
it. And at the time, it was like big news. I like, look, you're in a fucking small area and so many girls are going missing. And obviously the lads were kind of known to be suspects in like literally both cases. So there was a group of lads called the Tucson Mafia that paid them a visit because, like, they're these big burly lads and they're like, if anybody's going to get a fucking confession out of them, it's going to be us, never mind the police. So they thought that if they put pressure on fucking Charles and Richie, and that they'd be able to, like, reunite these family, you know, with their daughters. But Richie kind of avoided going near them at all. And when they did eventually find him, he was only asked a couple of questions because man was shaking like a shitting cat, and they just thought, like, you know, he was like being intimidated. But like Charles had like lied through his teeth. He had said, oh no, sure, I thought Gretchen had run away to San Diego. Sure, we're planning on going up to San Diego to help look for them because that's where I really feel like she's at. Like, we want to join in the search, but people keep on targeting us. How are we meant to search for her? How are we meant to go with that party to look for these girls when everybody there thinks that we're guilty? So, like, literally trying to, like, fucking manipulate and guilt these fucking men.
Yeah.
But once they had started questioning Richie, like, he was terrified that they had already found the bodies and that they knew that he knew. And they were just waiting for him to crack and waiting for him to catch out in a lie. So he completely starts to kind of like mentally shut down at this point. And one of the girls, remember that I'd mentioned that Charles had been engaged to, not Mary now, the other girl, Darlene. Richie kind of fell madly in love with her, like head over heels in love with her. He was terrified that she was going to be one of Charles' like casts off, like she was going to be a part of his hit list. So he began to patrol her house in order to protect her and keep other boys from approaching her because he didn't know if he was going to rope other lads into it like the way how he did with John. You know, he didn't know if he was going to have like somebody else on side. But
yeah,
somebody had slashed her screen door and her father thought that it was Richie, but Richie thought that it was Charles, and this just sent him for a fucking loop. He was like, no, my God, oh my God, oh my God. He's going to attack her. He's going to kill her. Like, I fucking love this girl. Like, this can't happen. So he became like, he would camp outside her house. He would hide in trash cans. He would hide in bushes. Like, to the point that people were actually afraid of him because they thought he was fucking mental. And when her father threatened to shoot him, he was like, please do, because it would end my suffering. Because he didn't want to live on knowing that something might happen to Darlene.
Okay.
Oh, no, honestly. But in around this time, Charles had went out with a 15-year-old girl named Diane Lynch. Right? And he's, Cleva, this kind of goes into the plaster that he was wearing on his nose. So he started wearing a patch on his nose, claiming that he had broken it. And he was still wearing the fucking thing, along with the makeup and the fake mole, years later, when he married Diane in 1965. So man was rocking this broken nose for like a solid year and a half.
I just know he smelled so fucking weird.
So bad. So bad.
Like, you know, like that musty kind of dry smell.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, fact. But Richie couldn't wrap his head around, like, how the fuck am I suffering this much mentally and this cunt is moving on with his life when he's the one that has actually murdered people and I'm being driven mad at the thought that he might hurt somebody that I care about, where he doesn't, like, don't give a fuck that he's brutally murdered, like, three girls. So he kind of slipped into a severe manic episode and his watching of Darlene got so intense that he was arrested and sentenced to leave town for at least 3 months in hope that it would help him get over his infatuation. Like, they didn't even put it down to stalking. They just said, no, he's infatuated. And I just go and live with your granny for a couple of months and you'll come back around. And so he did. He went to live with the grandmother in Ohio. But when he got there, it's like he was kind of away from the situation. But he also got clarity as to be like, fuck no, man. I actually need to tell the police. Like, I am getting myself into such fucking harm's way trying to protect this girl when I can protect her by fucking telling the police and have him out of our lives in general. So when he gets there, he tells his grandmother everything and they contact the police in Tucson. The police in Tucson then fly him back. So they want him to show them the location of the two girls' bodies, like the sisters. And he told them all about how fucking Charles had also murdered Aileen and that John Saunders and Mary French were also in on it as well. Like, they were accessory to murder. With fucking Richie's help, they found the skeletal remains of the Fritz sisters. Bits of clothing, a shoe, and wisps of hair were also found. And it was now time to fucking set their aims on Charles. Charles was working in the front yard of his house on November 10th, 1965, when the cops came up to arrest him. At first, he thought that the men in the car were a part of the fucking mafia because they had been circling his house. Charles, why do you think you're that cool that the mafia are going to be after you? Like, the actual mafia.
He's not like, come on.
Come on. He's no, he's honestly fucking
fish
ridiculous
to fry, man.
Oh, for fucking sure.
Honestly, the ego on this one.
So he went inside, not thinking that, you know, the police were going to follow after him, which they obviously fucking did. And they dragged him out by the scruff of the neck out of his front door. And back at the police station, Charles was played the tapes of Richie recounting everything that he had seen, everything that Charles had told him. And they brought Richie into the room in hopes that they'd have a confrontation and that Charles would confess. But all they did was fucking glare at each other. And Charles said, I know why you're doing this. That was all he said. Refused to say anything else. But nevertheless, fucking Charles protested his innocence and said that he would prove it at trial. They booked him for the two murders at the time because they had only found the remains of the Fritz sisters initially. Oh my God, no, this is actually so embarrassing. So at the booking, they asked him to remove his boots. Obviously, he was fucking very reluctant to do so because when he did, he was clearly several inches shorter. And photographers from the press crowded in, and as he sat down, refusing to stand for them, the contents of his boots were emptied in front of the press as to shame him. And they were filled with fucking folded up rags, flattened beer cans, and fucking pieces of cardboard. Like, man had these well stocked.
That is so shameful.
So shameful. So he was held on bail, right? And his hearing was going to be set for December 13th. And so the police rounded up John Saunders and Mary, and they both, like, admitted that they were there for the murder of Aileen. They both helped bury the body. That they were both accessory to murder, but they're not the ones that killed him or killed her. Charles was. And John was like, to prove it, he was like, look, I'm going to show you where her body is. Because Charles was still refusing to say anything about Aileen. Like, wasn't mentioning it at all. He was only able to locate the grave. But likewise, Mary, like, she tried as well, but she couldn't find it. Although, when she brought them out, the search turned up fucking two rusty hair curlers that they had buried separately. And her mam, Norma, was able to identify them as belonging to her daughter. But, so the area was dug up, like, every which way, but sure, it was to no avail. The Sheriff Burr firmly believed that the hurricane that happened in September of 64 might have, like, washed away the bones, like, another location.
Oh.
Or, like, could have pushed the sand and, like, could have, how to say, like, not changed the landscape, but, you know, if big piles of sand are, like, covering larger areas, it's kind of, you're not going to remember it right because it kind of looks different. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But anyway, the county attorney said that he was more than happy to proceed the case with or without a body. He's like, no, irregardless, we're going for it. Like, they felt like they had enough evidence anyway that he was going to get done with the murder.
Fair.
But the thing was, at the preliminary hearing, John Saunders pleaded guilty to first degree murder. Mary French agreed to being a fucking accessory, but to lesser charges, and both were given, what were they? Oh, sorry, I have written this fucking nurse with, oh yeah, sorry, they both has to testify against Charles in order to get their lesser sentences. So on November 30th, John Saunders was sentenced to life in prison, but he was eligible after 7 years, which I think he did get. Mary French was also charged accessory to murder and concealing evidence, and no, it was just a compound felony. She would be eligible parole in 4 to 5 years, which I also think she got. But for Charles himself, he was to remain on bond because they didn't want Aileen's murder trial to go ahead straight away. Because obviously they didn't have the body, I think they wanted just to wait out a little bit longer. Because they also knew he had this second charge coming up of the murder of the Fritz sisters. And there was bodies for this. So he was going to get caught either way. But they just wanted enough time for them to be able to finally, like, nail the hammer on the head. Or no. Nope. Yeah.
Right.
Nail.
Hammer the nail
on the head. That's it.
Hit the nail on the head.
Hit. Girl, you said it. Because I fucking clearly didn't. I didn't at all.
Nail the hammer on the head.
Charles's trial for the murders of Gretchen and Wendy Fritz was scheduled for February 15th, 1966. And the state were aiming for the death penalty. And by fucking Christ, did they go with everything they fucking had to get this gun. He had basically said that he had spent the whole day with his family and that his family can attest to this, right? His mom, Catherine, went up. She was like, yes, Charles is with me all day long. He was at the house. Charles Sr. Charles Sr. took to the fucking stand, let me tell you. And he was like, I don't think that's true at all. He said he actually wasn't in the house at all. We hadn't seen him because he was, I know for a fact, he was having a raging house party and he came nowhere near us.
Good man. He's like,
he was fucking 10 out of 10, so he was.
True him, under the bus AF.
As you fucking should, why are you protecting a piece of shit? I don't care that it's your child.
Facts.
Oh, man, he fucking hated him anyway. And so when Catherine, the man, was on the stand, she was like, I hear that you've gathered evidence. What evidence do you have to support that my child is guilty? And they basically said, well, guitar strings were used to bound wrists. We found a guitar in your son's home that was missing some fucking strings. And, you know, John and Mary had also said that guitar strings were used. And she goes like, oh yes, well, what colour were they? And they were like, well, as the evidence shows, these are black guitar strings that had been found. Catherine goes, well, now, I'm actually afraid to tell you, but my son's ones were grey. So all of this evidence has to go out the window because I said so. But when Charles Sr. got up to the case, he was like, oh, and I just would also like to clarify, the guitar strings probably did belong to Charles because he did indeed have black guitar strings. They weren't grey. So he was like, absolutely fuck him. He's not getting away with this at all. Like, Catherine, like, immediately was like, I'm filing for divorce. Like, after they came out of that court proceeding, she got in contact with her lawyer to start the fucking, what's it called, the paperwork.
Well, yes, I mean, he knew that was going to happen. He didn't care.
Oh, he fucking knew.
He probably would have divorced her.
He didn't give a shit. No, yeah, he didn't.
Yeah, he's definitely like, fuck this bitch in particular. She's got to be protected.
Yeah, no, he didn't give a shit. So the detectives came to the stand and testified that they had found the black guitar strings in the desert near the jawbone of one of the girl's skulls. Like, they didn't even know which girl it was because they were that skeletal. Like, they were far too mummified and they couldn't even figure out what cause of death was. Like, that's how bad that they were. And they had also figured out that Charles had initially gone to pawn off the guitar at a pawn shop, but they wouldn't take. Because, like, man, why are you trying to give us a fucking broken guitar without strings? And he's like, well, you can just fix it. And they're like, no, how about you fix it and then you fucking bring it back? The pawn shop owner came in and was like, no, he was actually, like, really sus trying to get rid of this guitar. And then a girl named Gloria Andrews admitted that she had been at Charles' house the night where Gretchen had, you know, fucking suddenly disappeared. And she said that Charles had taken a phone call off of Gretchen and said, I'm going to get that bitch if it's the last thing I do. He then left with fucking one of his tit friends, Paul, and he was carrying an old black briefcase, had returned around 1 o'clock in the morning, and Gloria had overheard Charles tell Paul to keep it quiet. And Paul said that you need to keep it short or, like, basically the same's going to happen to you. And she also recounts that Charles had been very scruffed up. Like, he looked dirty. Like, he had been, like, rolling around in the muck type thing. And Paul had left taking two large butcher knives with him. And the next day, Charles had to call Gloria to tell her that, oh, Gretchen's missing. But now that she is missing, I suppose I can go out with anybody I want now. Are you free?
Excuse the fuck out of me, man.
Rude fuckingness. Sorry now. Dirty little bastard.
Even if he wasn't the one to kill her, like,
it's actually banging out of order, like,
bullshit right there.
And a few more witnesses would come forward and say, no, I remember being at his house that night. Yeah, he was throwing a massive house party. He was giving off mad about Gretchen, saying that how she's a stupid bitch, that how he fucking hated her, and if she didn't get what was coming to her, he didn't know what he was going to do. But anyway, the jury only took 2 hours to deliberate, and they were like, man is guilty. Death. So he got served the death penalty for the murder of the Fritz sisters.
Good. Fuck him.
But so remember I was saying that he was held on bond for Aileen's murder because they kind of wanted to gather, like,
as
they possibly could. So his trial day for her murder was due to reschedule on October 4th, 1966. But Sir Charles was due to be executed on June 17th by lethal injection. So he wouldn't have made the fucking trial date, right? So everything then was trying to be sped quicker. So his lawyer, who was, like, top of the range, by the way, like, his mom paid for a really, really fancy attorney that was known for getting people off of murder charges, like, really, really bad murder charges, like, kind of like how Kim Kardashian's dad was known as, like, a part of, like, the super team or whatever the fuck, the dream team. His lawyer was, like, one of those lads.
Daddy Cochran, man.
Right? And he had basically told him, look, just accept second degree murder. It's not going to carry as heavy as a punishment for fucking the death penalty, because they were planning on fighting the death penalty anyway. So, like, if you get a double dose of death sentence, you're not getting rid of that. Yeah. But you have a chance of fighting one if you plead lesser for this one, right?
Right.
This was all set in stone. He had signed the paperwork or the confession basically to agree to the plea of second degree murder when his lawyer suddenly, like, dipped out. Like, he had no intention of getting him off that fucking death penalty whatsoever. He fucking fled. He was like, you're going to die and you're going to get this fucking second charge. So then obviously Charles started fucking kicking up blue murder, saying how he demands a retrial in both cases because the lawyer clearly had it out for him. He was coerced into making, like, a false confession that he never did fucking murder Aileen in the first place. And the lawyer was like, the judge was like, what we're going to do, we're going to appoint you a new lawyer, 2 psychiatrists to examine you, and then we can have a new trial. But once the psychiatrists were dropped in and the fact that it was like a state-appointed lawyer, so like one of the cheap lawyers, and that he didn't get to pay to have one of these, oh, well, if they're really expensive, they must be really good lawyers, which is obviously not the fucking case.
No.
No, not at all. Sure, the one that he did pay for, well, his man paid for, sure, didn't he fuck off and leave him high and dry because he knew your man was a guilty bastard?
Yeah, literally.
So he refused then to submit for testing. He was like, I'm not doing it. Because he knew he'd be found sane. He knew he couldn't go in there and act insane to the fact that he'd get off on an insanity charge. He knew he wouldn't make it, so he said, I don't see the fucking point. So he withdrew his motion for a new trial, and the judge awarded him a 50 years to life sentence for the murder of Aileen. But Charles turned around and said, I'd rather die. He'd rather death than rot away in prison.
Okay, sure, like.
So on June 23rd,
I mean, why did you complain so much about the fucking death penalty?
Caused a whole fucking argument to get this done.
You complained so much about the death penalty that they were like, okay, we'll retrial and then you can just get life. And said, he was like, I don't want to serve life. Well, fucking.
What?
I was actually hoping for
Did you
for
think
nothing.
You were going to get the same time as John? A fucking 7 years and you're done with it, like.
To be fair, those two got way too fucking little anyways.
Oh, they did. Far too little. Far too little.
Agreed.
Oh, no.
Like, to be fair, now I can see him. I can see why he was thick. Because they got, well, Mary got fucking 4 or 5 years in the end.
Mm. Yeah.
And why he's getting the death penalty or life. And, like, they were just, well, not just as guilty, but they were fucking.
But they orchestrate, like, they helped orchestrate the whole fucking thing.
Exactly. Just because they didn't
actually. Yeah, Mary especially, yeah.
She lured her in.
Yeah. Like, Mary should have gotten more, I think, than even the other fella.
Oh, like 100%. John. Definitely. Yeah, 100%.
Like, to be fair, I can see why he'd be thick because they did just as much as me. They just didn't land the fucking killing blows, like, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Like, he had an idea and the other two fucking ran with it. With not a second question.
Yeah.
On June 23rd, Charles told a sheriff who he had started to confide in where Aileen was buried. And after a couple of failed attempts, they were managed to locate the grave. So Aileen was finally reunited. Her remains were finally reunited with her family and she could have a proper burial. But should that also mean that they also had a body? So even if he did want to go to a retrial, well, he'd be up for the fucking death penalty now, so he might as well take his fucking 50 years.
Yep.
So Charles was in Arizona Penitentiary. Penitentiary? Penitentiary.
Yeah.
There we go. Awaiting death for the murders of Gretchen and Wendy. And he attempted to escape once by hiding inside a hollowed out exercise horse. But sure, he was found, you know, before he did actually manage to escape. He then
An exercise horse? What's that?
Yeah, I think it's one of those, like, barrel fucking things. Do you know the ones that, like, they're kind of, like, suspended?
Are they the ones that you use for gymnastics, though? That you jump over, like, they have the... They kind of look like a sandal.
I don't know how you'd hide in one of those. How would you hide in one of them, though? Because it was hollowed out.
Because they're not, like...
I'm literally... They're just giving me fucking pictures of actual horses and, like, jump layouts and shit, like, how many strides to take. Oh, yeah, it is, Savannah, you're right. It's one of those ones...
What the fuck were they doing with that in a prison, by the way? This was the 60s. This is awful. Like, well, I mean, good for them, but, like, awful. They're fucking gymnastics equipment.
Like, they're not very big, like, are they?
I think they are big enough.
Pommel horse. Confused. Yeah, what it's, I don't know. Look up pommel horse.
Well, then pommel is it the horse. Same thing? An exercise? Because it's literally, like, on the yoke it was written an exercise horse.
I don't know. That's what I'm imagining anyways is, you know, the thing that they do that they spin around on.
Yeah, I would have thought it was that as well. They can be kind of thick, so, like...
Yeah.
I don't know.
You
anyway.
Could nearly, and he was only 5'3", he probably was able to nearly fucking lie down in it.
Anyway.
No idea. Could be very wrong, but we'll find
he
out.
He then used a suicide attempt to try and escape, but sure that didn't work because when, you know, he just woke up miraculously and tried to run, they were like, man, I thought you were half dead, what the fuck are you doing? Get back. And they caught him. And in 1971, the state of Arizona temporarily abolished the death penalty, but sure he was still in prison for 50 years. So he tried another escape and briefly succeeded. And that's when he was spotted on a railroad by a worker. And because I think your man went to school with him and he was like, man, that's fucking Charles. And Charles is wearing a silly yellow wig. So the Yorkshire Terrier, that wig, is from when he escaped and he tried to disguise himself. And he was swindly fucking taken and fucked back into prison. While there, he changed his name to Paul David Ashley. And turned to writing music and essays to keep himself busy.
Paul David Ashley.
Yeah. Paul David Ashley.
Three first names, is it?
Poetic.
Oh my god, it's so much worse than their fucking first name, last name.
Sorry, I keep thinking about him being inside the fucking horse. Imagine someone like, and he had to be like pulled out, like extracted.
Oh, fucking.
I keep thinking about him. Oh, I don't fucking know. I hate this man, man.
I hate him. Hate him.
He's literally the saddest of all the sad.
So he tried reading, was it Dostoevsky's Crime and Punishment? I'm butchering these names, but God forgive me. Anyway, and he was puzzled by the works of, I'm going to say his name, is Raskolnikov. I'm going to be probably wrong. But anyway, this fella who had murdered two women, and his writings were basically about how he was riddled with guilt and all he felt was remorse. He didn't understand, but yet he wanted people to think that he wasn't guilty by murdering these people, but then also couldn't relate to somebody who did feel sorry about murdering someone. So, you know, anyway. Mm. But he liked to think... Oh, yeah. Man had things going for
sake.
But he liked to strut around the prison as if he were Billy Big Bollocks. Like, he was better than everybody else. Nobody else could ever looked up to him. Other people, they were only petty criminals. Like, they obviously didn't come from well-established backgrounds like he did. They were obviously all very poor, which, I mean, Charles, you're all in the same place, hon. So, what does that actually mean? What does that honestly mean? But one day he got a little bit too big for his boots. Mm-hmm. And he was found stabbed, would you believe, because he gave a little bit too much lip one day. And he was found lying in a pool of blood. So he had a massive gaping wound in his chest, which he did not respond well to surgery. Lost a fucking eye in it and all. And had about 20 stab wounds to his face and chest.
Ah! A bad shame.
Good enough.
It couldn't have happened to a better person. It couldn't have happened to a fucking better person. I'm actually delighted that I'm like...
So deserving.
You know what?
To be mutilated, you know, in all your life.
Good fucking enough for you.
It's honestly 10 out of 10.
And the hack of him.
Honestly, he deserved a bad death and he got one, and that is so satisfied.
Never happens. By Christ, they make shite of him. And he ended up comatose, you know, for about 10 days. Because somehow he was still fucking clinging on for life like the little fucking parasite that he is. But on March 30th, 1975, he passed away to his injuries. And then his parents, at their request, he was buried at the prison cemetery, to which they never visited.
Oh, sorry. So his mother went to all that fucking effort to pretend that he was innocent. And then when it actually comes down to it, she was like...
Took it back.
That was definitely a what will the neighbours think job. As in, she didn't want to be judged.
100%.
Not that she thought he was innocent. The second he was found guilty, she was like, well, I knew he did that shit. Mm-hmm. I just don't want the neighbours to think that I raised a fucking killer. Well, you did.
But that's the thing, though, because, like, do you know the way the whole nature versus nurture thing? Like, you can't help what way that you're born, but the way that you're nurtured, you can fully blame. Well, not you can fully blame, but actions can be blamed on the way that somebody is brought up. So if you had the neighbours making them the talk of the town, like, well, she must have raised him like that because he wasn't her own. Like, that's the way that they would view it. You know what I mean? Like, oh, well, he wasn't actually her kid, so it has to be down to the way that she raised him. She has to be at fault even a little bit. So she has to distance herself away from him then, at that suppose. And she'd be like, no, sure, I'm not the one who gave birth to him.
How thick would you be, though? Like, you fucking adopted a child and he ended up doing all this.
Oh, my God. I wish I had a fucking time machine.
Like, should have left you in the orphanage.
Or, this is going to sound really bad.
Can you, and this sounds
just
really bad.
Just take him anyway and then leave him in the desert to the vultures. But anyway. You can give them back. Yeah. Like, it's not like, oh, after 30 days you can't bring it back, your warranty is expired. They have to kind of take it back if it's a kid.
Is like, if she, they probably wouldn't let you adopt again. Do you know?
I don't know. They could say anything, though. Like, they're a well-to-do family. They're like, no, he was a problem child. There's clearly something wrong with him. And because that would have been seen as, like, a great fucking shame, it'd be like, oh, sure, grand.
Yeah.
No, I'm not saying there wouldn't have been something that would have made it, like, a bit harder. But I feel like you'd get away with it a lot easier back then than you would now.
Especially being wealthy, yeah.
That they were, like, really true. But yeah, that's the story of the rootin' tootin'.
Thank fuck he was an only child, though.
Oh, thank fucking God.
Because imagine what he would have done to a sibling. Like,
if he had a sibling,
taking his annoyance out on a younger sibling, like.
Yeah, and the fact that he's he exclusively went out with 16-year-olds when he was in his whole fucking 20s. Or 15-year-olds, should I say. And liked them fucking slender. You mean they had no boobs? Is that what you're telling me? Pedophile.
You like them slender, so you like young.
You like little kid bods. Is what you're saying.
You like
exactly
them
what you're
them very as young. You like them as young as they look as possible.
Yeah, dirty bastard. But yeah, lads, that's it. I tell you now, I'm fucking rattled after that.
I feel 100 times more sick than when I started, so that's great.
You know, clearly a very what's the word, sought after man. Do you know?
A high value male, is it?
Uh huh. They've lost a good one, lads.
Can we say thank God they've for Richard grassing on him, because he definitely would have killed him.
I think so. Like, only that his fucking delusions about him going after Darlene is what saved this entire thing, because nobody would have found the girls unless they were shown. And the other two weren't cracking. They wouldn't have, because they were living their life off grand.
No, genuinely.
Like, Mary had a kid. She was married, the whole shebang. John was out living abroad. They would have been having a grand life. But thank God Richie had a bit of fucking common sense about him. I know it sent him into the pits and it sent him extremely manic. But manic for a good cause.
But at least he did it.
Manic for a good cause. I was going to say, like, do you remember the whole thing I know why you're doing this thing that he had sent to Richie in the interviewing room? I am genuinely just thinking that it's like a case of, like, I know you're doing it because you're just jealous that I slept with Darlene and you didn't.
Or do you think he really was going to go after Darlene, or was holding it over him that he was going to go after
Darlene?
I don't know if Darlene
knew anything. Only a very, very few people.
No, I don't think Darlene
knew. That's the thing.
But Charles probably
He
did.
Was only going after the ones that knew of it. Yeah.
Knew something. True, but unless he got like a taste for killing, because he did say...
True,
like,
but I don't know.
You know, it gets easier each time. It didn't sound like he was going to stop. Like,
oh no, I say he definitely would have done it again. I don't know if Darlene would have been on his agenda. Unless it was out of spite.
Yeah.
Which I don't know. Yeah, that was it anyway. Rattled me. So it did.
Fantastic. Do we have anything like lighthearted to end the podcast
Not
with?
Not a single fucking thing.
No. Sure. I mean, Enoch Burke is in jail currently.
Oh.
Unreal.
Yeah. And you have people online fucking Twitter. I've blocked a lot of people because I can't be fucking looking at the home.
I can't be looking at that shit now.
Transphobes, whatever the fuck. But they're like, oh, he's in jail because he refused to use pronouns, like this, that and the other. That's not why he's in jail. He's in jail because he refused to fucking abide by a court order.
Yeah.
He's literally in jail because he said in court, he was like, no, I will not be abiding by it. And they were like, okay, you're going into jail until you agree to abide by it. So now he's in jail.
You know what I mean? Like,
and he has the audacity to act surprisingly.
He can release it. He's the only one who can release himself. Like, if he just says, okay, I just won't go back to the school, then they let him out.
Oh, let him rot in there. Stubborn bastard. Let him fucking rot in there. Fuck him.
Exactly. May he get himself more and more time as he goes on for being insubordinate little cunt.
Genuinely.
Bastard.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, good enough for him. It's good that he's in there. It's where he's
gone.
But aside from that, no. I don't think I have any news anyways.
Trying to think. Do I? I mean, no. Mercury is in retrograde, lads. And I tell you one thing. I feel like it's battering my fucking hole. Oh, it has me out of sorts of ways. So I feel like I can't have any good
news.
That's the thing. I feel like I can't have good news because this is fucking me up so bad.
I mean, fair. And I also have not, because I got a cold after having like my fucking procedure and everything, and I've just felt like shit for a solid week now. So yeah. But listen, I'm glad I made it to find out who the fuck this Yorkshire Terrier was.
Yeah.
I was not sitting this one out for the simple fact that it was this story.
Week the week. Now, I can't say that it was worth listening to. But at least the mystery was solved.
Listen, he was a big, massive dickhead. So, fuck
him. Is right. Cunt. Arsehole.
Then, I think we're all fried enough. And this has been on for a bit of time. So, we'll wrap it up. And, we'll be back next week. But what should have been coming out this week, but it's not going to have. Or actually, last week. which is the start of... Oops. Eric Edgar Cook.
Are we going to do it in the order we've recorded? So like as in we'll do
No, I'm not going to interrupt the series, so we're going to do it kind of fucked up a bit now. So we're going to release this episode first and then the following week, so next week for our listeners, we're going to release what should have been coming out originally, which is the start of Edward.
Okay.
Eric, Jesus Christ, I always fuck up his name and I don't
I do the same thing. I keep calling him fucking Edgar and I know that's his like middle / surname. I don't know why.
Yeah, it's like his first surname.
Yeah.
Eric.
Oh my God. Eric,
whatever. Him.
Ew. So, the fact his name is Edgar Allan Cook. Like, you just... Edgar Allan Poe. I'm sorry.
It's Eric Edgar Cook.
See? We all keep fucking doing it.
Oh my God. See, man, I tell you, I've actually no memory of that episode. Like, I was not there. I was there. But I wasn't there.
I don't remember you being
Shit
there
happens.
Either.
Okay.
I was because I even have the file on my laptop. Like, I was fully present.
No, I know. I believe you, but I just don't remember it either.
Nope.
It was literally loaded up for me to edit. But listen, we're going to do this one first and then that one. And so things might not make sense because we already said them and they happened a week before. So it's fine. Listen, it's fine. We made it back at all.
Read between the lines, lads. You know what we mean anyways.
Yeah, lads.
And if you don't fucking talk to Lizzie.
You're free to try attack me.
Yeah, it's totally fine.
I will.
So we'll catch everyone next week to see if they want to scrap Lizzie. And we'll continue from there. hopefully I won't sound like
that thing this. From SpongeBob that says chocolate. That one.
Yes, I like chocolate.
Because that's what you sound like right now.
Yeah, I'm going to go make soup. Listen, I'm wishing myself some positive vibes and negative tests this week. Because, like, who knows?
Savannah, you know? That would who be knows? So fucking embarrassing if you got COVID now.
After all these years of not having it, I feel like it actually...
And it coming towards the end of 2022 and you catching COVID, that is fucking so embarrassing.
It would be me. It would be on brand. It would be, honestly. So not even ruling it out.
Yeah.
But other than that... Always be a hypocrite.
Don't forget to tense your ankles.
And join our club.